The Hidden Life of Trees, Chapter 34. Why is the forest green? Why do we find it so much more difficult to understand plants than animals? It's because of the history of evolution, which split us off from vegetation very early on. All our senses developed differently, and so we have to use our imaginations to get even the slightest idea of what is going on inside trees. Our colour vision is a good example. I love the combination of a bright blue sky over a canopy of lush green. For me, this colour combination is nature at its most idyllic and the most relaxing colour combination I can imagine. Would trees agree with me? Their answer would probably be, more or less. Beeches, spruce, and other species certainly find blue sky, which means lots of sun, equally agreeable. For them, however, the colour isn't so much romantic or moving as it is a flag that signals the buffet is open. For a cloudless firmament means high-intensity light and, therefore, optimal conditions for photosynthesis. Frantic activity for maximum output is the order of the day. Blue means a lot of work. The trees get full as they convert light, carbon dioxide, and water into supplies of sugar, cellulose, and other carbohydrates. Green, however, has a completely different significance. Before we get to the typical colour of most plants, we first have to answer another question. Why is the world full of colour anyway? Sunlight is white, and when it is reflected, it is still white. And so we should be surrounded by a clinical-looking, optically pure landscape. That this is not what we see is because every material absorbs light differently or converts it into other kinds of radiation. Only the wavelengths that remain are refracted and reach our eyes. Therefore, the colour of organisms and objects is dictated by the colour of the reflected light. And in the case of leaves on trees, this colour is green. But why don't we see leaves as black? Why don't they absorb all the light? Chlorophyll helps leaves process light. If trees processed light super efficiently, there would be hardly any left over, and the forest would then look as dark during the day as it does at night. Chlorophyll, however, has one disadvantage. It has a so-called green gap, and because it cannot use this part of the colour spectrum, it has to reflect it back, unused. This weak spot means that we can see this photosynthetic leftover, and that's why almost all plants look deep green to us. What we are really seeing is waste light, the rejected part that trees cannot use. Beautiful for us, useless for the trees. Nature that we find pleasing because it reflects trash? Whether trees feel the same about this, I don't know. But one thing is for certain. Hungry beeches and spruce are as happy to see blue sky as I am. The colour gap in chlorophyll is also responsible for another phenomenon, green shadows. If beeches allow no more than 3% of sunlight to reach the forest floor, it should be almost dark down there during the day. But it isn't, as you can see for yourself when you take a walk in the forest. Yet, hardly any other plants grow here. The reason is that shadows are not all the same colour. Although many shades of colour are filtered out in the forest canopy, for example, very little red and blue make their way through, this is not the case for the trash colour green. Because the trees can't use it, some of it reaches the ground. Therefore, the forest is transfused with a subdued green light that just happens to have a relaxing effect on the human psyche. In my garden, a single beech seems to prefer red leaves. It was planted by one of my predecessors, and it has grown into a large tree. I don't like it very much because, in my opinion, the leaves look unhealthy. You can find trees with reddish leaves in many parks, where they're supposed to inject interest in other otherwise monotonous seas of green. The common English name for my tree is copper beech. In German, it is known as Blutbuche or blood beach, which doesn't make me any more inclined to like it. But really, I think I feel sorry for this tree, because its deviation from the traditional appearance of a beech works to its disadvantage. The colour is the result of a metabolic disorder. Young developing leaves on normal trees are often tinged red, thanks to a kind of sunblock in their delicate tissue. This is, and I need to take a moment to pronounce this properly, anthocyanin, which blocks ultraviolet rays to protect the little leaves. As the leaves grow, the anthocyanin is broken down with the help of an enzyme. A few beeches or maples deviate from the norm because they lack this enzyme. They cannot get rid of the red colour, and they retain it even in their mature leaves. Therefore, their leaves strongly reflect red light and waste a considerable portion of the light's energy. Of course, they still have the blue tones in the spectrum for photosynthesis, but they are not achieving the same levels of photosynthesis as their green-leaved relatives. These red trees keep appearing in nature, but they never get established and always disappear again. Humans, however, love anything that is different, and so we seek out red varieties and propagate them. One man's trash is another man's treasure, is one way to describe this behaviour, which might stop if people knew more about the tree's circumstances. The main reason we misunderstand trees, however, is that they are so incredibly slow. Their childhood and youth last 10 times as long as ours. Their complete lifespan is at least 5 times as long as ours. Active movements, such as unfurling leaves or growing new shoots, take weeks or even months. And so it seems to us that trees are static beings, only slightly more active than rocks. And the sounds that make the forest seem so alive, the rustling of the crowns in the wind, the creaking of branches and trunks as they blow back and forth, are only passive swaying motions that are, at best, a nuisance for the tree. It's hardly any wonder that many people today see trees as nothing more than objects. At the same time, some of the processes under the trunk happen much more quickly than the ones we can see. For instance, water and nutrients, that is to say, tree blood, flow from the roots up to the leaves at the rate of 1/3 of an inch per second. Even conservationists and many foresters are victims of optical illusions in the forest. This is hardly surprising. People rely heavily on sight, and so we are particularly influenced by this sense. Thus, ancient forests in central European latitudes often strike us as being dull and species poor when we see them for the first time. The diversity of animal life plays out mostly in a microscopic realm hidden from the eyes of forest visitors. We notice only the larger species, such as birds or mammals, and we don't see them very often because typical forest dwellers are mostly quiet and very shy. And so when I take people visiting my forest around the old beech preserves, they often ask why they hear so few birds. Species that live out in the open often make more noise and take less trouble to keep out of sight. Perhaps you are familiar with this behaviour from your own garden, where tits and chickadees, blackbirds and robins quickly get used to you and don't bother to hop or fly away more than a few yards when you're coming along. Even the butterflies in the forest are mostly brown and grey and blend in with the bark when they land on a tree trunk, whereas those that fly in wide open spaces vie with one another in such a symphony of colour and iridescence that it's almost impossible to miss them. It's the same with plants. Forest species are mostly small and look very much alike. There are so many hundreds of species of mosses, all tiny, that even I have lost track, and the same goes for the diversity of lichens. How much more attractive are the plants of the open plains? The radiant foxglove towering up to 6 feet tall, yellow ragwort, the sky blue forget-me-not. Such splendour brightens the hiker's heart. It's no wonder that some conservationists are thrilled when storms or commercial forestry operations disturb the forest ecosystem by opening up large clearings. They truly believe the open space increases species diversity, and they miss the fact that this is traumatic for the forest. In exchange for a few species adapted to open areas that now feel like $1 million basking happily in the bright sun, hundreds of microscopic organisms of little interest to most people die out locally. A scientific study by the Ecological Society of Germany and Austria and Switzerland concluded that although increased forest management leads to increased richness in the diversity of plant life, this is no cause for celebration, but rather proof of the level of disturbance of the natural ecosystem.